What?
Come on. Yeah. Check it out one time for the ass. I'ma take you for the ass.
Hello and welcome to third episode of Cool People with Ryan McHugh. And joining me today we have Erica Dumont.
Hey.
Dumont, as the correct pronunciation.
That's correct.
And chiming in one time or another will be Aaron Range over here.
Hello.
So Erica is a, would you call yourself a historian?
I would, yeah.
An official historian?
Yeah.
She works in Old North Church in Boston, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the other place?
The Winslow House in Marshfield.
Oh, yeah, the Winslow House in Marshfield, which is like a historical house mm-hmm. where you can go and you can take a tour. And then are you or are you not dressed in old time?
We are not, no. I mean, I...
Are you outside, like, plowing the fields?
And... No, I wish I was. No, I don't. No, I am just dressed in normal 21st century garb, unfortunately.
Oh, so, yeah. Some would say that's not legit, but...
No, yeah, some would, but... No, we're, that's what you call a living history museum, when you go and people are actually dressed up in 18th century garb and doing 18th century things.
LARPing.
What? LARPing. That's exactly. LARPing. Exactly. It's scholarly LARPing. Right, so no, we're not a living history museum, but... Sometimes we have reenactors at the Winslow House. This week we have a man named Michael LePage, and he's going to be dressed up as Dr. Isaac Winslow talking about 18th century medicine. And then on Saturday we're going to have...
Which is like 18th century medicine is like what? Like a pick and like a...
Right,
saw.
Like... Yeah, a saw. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like leeches. Yeah. And then on Saturday, August 3rd, we're having my friend Tom... He works at the Old North with me, and he's dressing up at, well, he's a reenactor anyway, professionally, and he's going to be doing a kids' Revolutionary War reenactment, Revolutionary War encampment.
So it's not a battle.
It's not. It's one, it's just him by
kids
himself.
Can't
it's,
handle
it's, kids can't it's a battle with kids.
Right.
He's like, okay. They get there, he's like, ambush. Okay. First thing you need to know, you can be ambushed in any minute.
No, he's going to be doing, I think he's going to be set. Actually, we're hoping he's going to be able to put a fire out back, starting a fire, like a little bonfire, and making hardtack. And they don't call it hardtack, but it's like hardtack, what Revolutionary War soldiers used to eat. And showing kids how the weapons work and what they used to wear and what life was like.
That probably tastes horrible.
It's probably horrible, yeah. Hardtack. Have you tried hardtack?
No.
Okay, it's bad. You can buy it.
No, we had it at... sixth grade, I think it was.
Seventh grade. Seventh,
sixth
I had
seventh, seventh grade.
I'm picturing peanut brittle.
Oh, no, it's way worse than peanut brittle. It's like...
Obviously, it's worse than
It's like
brittle.
Flour, salt, and water just like hardened. That's what
it
is.
Oh, so it's like... Isn't that like a tortilla?
Kinda, but not Mexican.
But it's way dry.
But it's dry, and it's hard, and you can't eat it unless you dunk it in like tea or hot water or something, and it would last for years at a time. That's why people... It was typically used out at sea if you were to go to Long Beach.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you would use it in...
I think I remember... teachers describing that mm-hmm. and all that stuff. Mm-hmm.
I remember during one class, I think I had like maybe six or seven of them.
Hardtack?
Yes.
They were delicious.
Yeah, they were delicious.
If
I liked it.
That would like hardtack, it would be you. Yeah.
He was spreading little Nutella on it. Aaron's like, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to talk to... And
yeah.
And that's why he like immediately
Aaron's
jumps in. He's like,
dominating
okay,
the conversation.
A little personal life.
Yeah,
experience.
When it comes to hardtack, I got this.
Right.
Well, I didn't know the conversation was going to shift to hardtack. And so, Old North Church. Which one's better, Old North Church? Which one is... No.
Well, it depends on which one... It depends on what sort of history you're looking for.
Right.
The Winslow House, it was a house. So, it's a house, and it's... Has
no,
a,
I mean, which one's more fun for you to work?
Well, Old North is probably... Is busier. So, that's... is a You know, as far as a day-to-day dealing with people, I get to see a lot more people at Old North because it's people from all over the world. We get 500,000 visitors a year. So that's more fast-paced and you meet a lot more people. But the Winslow House is, I'm more behind the scenes when it comes to Winslow House because I just do, you know, I run the day-to-day operations
right, yeah.
and all that stuff. So it's a different experience. So it's hard to compare.
How many Japanese tourists do you see?
At the Old North?
Yeah.
Thousands every year.
Yeah?
Yes. They actually, last week, there was a group of teenage Japanese girls, and our church sexton, which is a sexton is like the caretaker of the church, he was outside just doing his thing, like mopping or whatever, and he had Bruins t-shirt on, and a group of 13-year-old Asian girls, Japanese girls, ambushed him, made him take a picture, just because he had a Bruins shirt on. So, that things like that happen all the time.
That's like that commercial where the guy's wearing the Red Sox hat, and they all think he's David Ortiz, but he's just like a white guy. And, like, oh, David Ortiz.
Yep.
And then he takes it off, and they're like, you're not Big Poppy.
Yeah, we, my friend Tom, who's coming on Saturday to the Winslow House, he works for, he works for a company called Lessons on Liberty. It's a tour company based in Boston, and they do tours of the Freedom Trail. And they're all in colonial garb, or they call it kit. So he dresses, he has like five different outfits that he wears depending on what, who he wants to be, what rank he wants to be. And, so he gets, he can't walk down any street in Boston without getting ambushed by a group of either Japanese tourists or anyone, actually. So we get a lot of that, but it's fun. We meet lots of people and lots of French people, lots of French tourists.
Why French?
I don't know. I think they just...
Because they helped us.
Exactly. They were the reason we won the war, so they figured they have...
They're like, every once in a while, they just like to stop in and let everybody know.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, you know, we helped you with that one. Mm-hmm. Oh, Statue of Liberty? Yeah, we gave you that.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, you didn't build that yourself.
Thank you, France.
In Old North, you're given tours.
Right, we do.
Hourly?
We do. No, what we do is we have, we're always on the floor, like in the main church. So when people come in, either a big group of people, you know, a tour group, or just happens to be 100 people in the church, we'll do a small presentation that lasts like 5 to 7 minutes. And it just gives a history of the church and its role in the revolution. And then every half hour we do a behind-the-scenes tour. Which is, here's my pitch, a half-hour guided tour that brings you up to the bell-ringing chamber and then down to the crypt, where there are over 1,000 people buried.
What? There's 1,000 people buried in Old North Church?
Yes, there are over 1,000 people buried.
In, like, the basement?
In the crypt, yeah.
Wow.
It's a crypt. There are 37 tombs.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yep. Tombs are between, they hold between 15 and 40 coffins, depending on the size of the tomb. Some of them are really big, some of them are small.
Yeah. Are they cremated, or are they just thrown
in? Nope, they're coffins.
Wow.
You can even see some of the.
We have pieces
coffins,
of. We have one of the tombs is an open tomb. As time went on, they started in the 1840s. They started moving bodies out of the tombs and putting them into a charnel pit, and that way they could sell that tomb to someone else because it was a big revenue builder for the church. So.
Church is very honest people.
Huh? Right. So they, that was common. Most churches.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, after a while, all the. People are dead, right? So no one cares. Where
I mean, the tombs had been built for 110 years. So they opened one of the tombs up, and they ended up leaving it open. And so now it's just this open space, and there's pieces of coffins in there, that like a coffin lid. You can see there's a hole. What they used to do is instead of having an open casket, they had a hole for the face, so you could see the person's face. And then when they buried them, they would put a cover on it and just bury it into the ground. So we have that. It's really cool.
Damn. Dropping history knowledge on us.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Are you always like, my girl works there, so...
Oh, yeah.
You know. You just walk in, you start, like, moving things around, you're like, it's okay.
No, it's fine, it's fine, my girlfriend works
there. Aaron goes in there, walks up to the pulpit, he's like, I get this, guys.
Yeah. He's like, hello, everybody. That was a little Australian, I guess, maybe.
Right.
Yeah, that was a little too Australian.
So, yeah, apparently you have an accent.
I'm your Australian tour guide.
G'day.
I saw the other day. I saw Larry the Cable Guy.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Only in America.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it yet.
And he was doing tours of. No, he was doing the Freedom Trail.
Yep.
And there was a guy who was like, "We're gonna reenact the Boston Massacre." There must have been 30 Japanese tourists taking pictures.
Oh, yeah, doing this.
And then I learned an interesting fact. I was like, "Wow, Larry the Cable Guy taught me something." That Paul Revere never actually said the British are coming.
Right. He would not have, because everyone was British.
Yeah.
It's
so sick.
So he would have probably said the lobster backs or red coats. That's what they typically call them.
They
or
were
the
saying
regulars, the regulars
he said
are out.
The regulars are out.
Yeah. It's funny, because I think a lot of people forget how British people actually were in the end of the 18th century.
Right.
Like, the fact that we even got, Concord Lexington happened, but up until that point, everyone thought that there was some sort of an agreement that was going to happen. No one thought that this was actually going to take place. And the fact that it did is...
Yeah. It's
crazy.
Weird.
It's really weird.
Because, like, everybody probably had British accents.
Right. Well, they had certain accents. I think they weren't British like what we would think today. But If there's a guy named David Hackett Fisher who wrote Paul Revere's Ride. He was a professor out at Brandeis, and he wrote Paul Revere's Ride, and he goes into depth about the history of the Revere family and other families in Boston at that time and how they were, and the way that they spelled things when they wrote it out. It's actually a Boston accent. Like, you'll have to read it.
Really?
The way he writes it out, it's like, I forget what one of the examples, but it's the way he writes it, because they spelled everything phonetically. So the way he writes it is written in a Boston
accent.
Because
they were uneducated, or?
No, just there was no standardized spelling until, I think, the end of the 19th century. So sort of a new thing, yeah. Things were started to become more, you know, as people started writing more and more, people learned how to write, and, you know, literacy became more widespread. People started spelling things the same way, but there was no, like, standardized spelling.
Yeah, you probably, even if you were educated, you'd want to spell it some way so someone who wasn't educated would know what you were saying.
Right, right? Exactly.
You wouldn't want to spell it, like, the fancy way.
Right.
You'd be like, what the hell?
Right.
What in the hell?
Right. So, actually, it's funny, because one of these stupid things we've always debated, my friends and I at Old North, and Paul Revere wrote an account of his famous ride in 1792, I think. Well, it's now famous. It wasn't then. But so it was, you know, 15 years after the fact, and he wrote an account of what happened that night. And in the thing, he says, I forget the exact words, but he says, I told my friend to show one lanthorn if they were going by land, mm-hmm. two lanthorns if by, you know, whatever, by Charles River. So we were like, I always thought it was just his way of saying, of writing lantern.
Yeah.
But turns out lanthorn was actually something different than lantern. A lanthorn was a cheaper version. Lanthorn has like a animal bone on one side, and it was a cheaper way. So we don't know if they actually use lanterns or if they use lanthorns.
But it still was like a candle in a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it basically was a candle in a hanging candle.
Yeah, same exact thing. So the one side, it wasn't all glass. One side was animal bone.
But one side was animal bone.
Yeah, that's the only difference.
That's what makes it a lanthorn.
So the displaying side was glass.
Right, it would have been glass anyway. Yeah, so I mean, it's stupid, but it's just kind of funny, because I always thought it was just his way of saying it.
This is like, this is a big deal.
Yeah. It's like, that's like make or break. Like, that could change history.
Yeah, that could.
Historians
are
like,
we are
shut the fuck up.
Right.
Yeah. It was a lanthorn. Like,
and there was a big debate a few years ago, about 15 years ago, about whether or not the Old North Church was the actual church that they hung the lanterns in. Because there was another church, the Old North Meeting House, which was where Paul Revere attended church, because the Old North Church, which is actually called Christ Church, was an Anglican church. So Paul Revere did not attend that church. He was a Puritan or Congregationalist. So he went to the Old North Meeting House. So some people have said, well, it had to have been the Meeting House that he was using, his own church, not the Old North Church. But we know for a fact that it was the Old North Church because just the geographical, you know, where it stood made sense.
It would make more sense that he would use geography than...
Right, and it was the highest building in Boston at that time. It was right across from Charlestown, so it just made sense.
Do you know where he lived? I don't know yet.
Paul Revere?
Yeah.
He lived, like, yeah,
so
his
you have
house
like a
is still there.
House.
The Paul Revere house is in North Square, which is right, it's right in the Freedom Trail. It's about a 5-minute walk from...
Oh, so that's like a stop in the Freedom Trail. Yeah, I'm sure I stopped there in like 5th grade on a field trip.
Yeah, the Revere house is, I think, the oldest brick structure within downtown Boston.
Yeah.
It dates to 1680s, and it's old. It wasn't his originally. He lived there for about 30 years. He did live there during the Revolution. But it was later like a boarding house and a store, and then in the 1910 or 1915, around there, they, you know, preserved
it. Restored it.
I
feel, is that like in the area where that molasses flood was?
Yeah, molasses flood was down on Commercial Street.
Oh, is this one of your specialties?
No, it's not. Actually, it's not. I actually just bought a book. There's a guy named Steve Puglio who is actually, he lives in Weymouth. And he wrote a book called The Dark Tide, and it's about the Great Molasses Flood of 1919. And he actually just spoke at the Winslow House. See, it all goes full circle. He just spoke at the Winslow House a couple weeks ago.
You pulled a couple strings.
Yeah.
Just a bit.
No, I didn't. I actually didn't schedule them. But, so anyway. So
you're
he,
like, I'll put you in my book.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, and I didn't. I should have put it in the book. But anyway, yeah, so that was down on Commercial Street, which was, like, it's right in the edge of the North End. North End is surrounded pretty much by water, so it's, like, right in the edge there, right in the water. And apparently, so, yeah, it's right, it's probably a 5-minute walk from the Old North Church. And apparently, on hot days, you can still smell molasses.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
I don't either. Because I work here on really hot days, and I've never smelled molasses. So, I don't know, but.
There's some guy who's just, like, that's his job, is to put molasses, like, re-molasses the streets. And he just
he sounds very nice. Like, sweeping the molasses.
He's like, George, you missed a spot.
He's like, they'll all believe me.
Oh, that's funny. There's a guy named Sonny who works, or he lives in the North End, and he lives like right around the corner from the Old North. And he's the one guy I could totally see doing that. He's one of the only, like, second generation Italian immigrants that still live in the North End, that's lived there all his life. He's like this old guy. He's wicked funny, and everyone claims that he's like part of the mob, but probably not.
But that's just what everybody says about every really.
But
Italian
guy. Yeah, every Italian guy in the North End is part of the mob.
You're in the mob, okay?
Yeah.
Right. Oh, okay.
I'm not in the mob. Yeah, that's what someone in the mob would say.
Yeah, I could see him putting molasses on the streets.
You haven't really explained to the full extent of the molasses.
The molasses flood was they had a big molasses tank that took in molasses from the ships, you know, that were coming in, and I don't know how many gallons is it
was. The molasses for rum.
Molasses was used for rum, yeah, and many other things too. Yeah. You know, it was molasses, but
getting drunk.
But it was. I don't know how many gallons. I think like 1,000 gallons. That's maybe way off. I don't know. But several hundred, if not thousands of gallons of molasses were sitting in this big tank. And it was this push to get this tank done because it was holding, this tank was going to be a holding spot for all this molasses. So there was this push to get this done. And they were rushing to get it done, they sort of, they didn't really pay attention to all of the details, I guess. They cut a few corners, apparently.
Yeah, yeah.
So when the molasses shipment came in, didn't quite hold it the way it was supposed to.
Yeah, and people died in molasses. That's crazy.
People died. I don't remember how many people died, but people and horses both died. It was, it was bad. It was devastating.
Yeah. I feel like it would be like that Austin Powers scene where the slow truck's coming at you.
I know.
I was thinking that, like, couldn't people have just,
it was probably hot, like, so it ran a little
people,
faster.
Yeah.
Just
the sheer volume of the tank, it was huge. And, when you have anything that's in large volume like that, if it spills over, it's going to go quickly.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
If it's warmer, it's going to move faster, too.
Yeah.
So
was it a hot day?
They probably bake it. Like, whatever they use molasses for, I'm sure they, like, heat it up.
Yeah. No, it was in the winter, I believe.
Well, then maybe it, like, was hot, and they spilled it over, mm-hmm. and then it, like, cooled down.
Yeah, like, cooled down as, like, traveling down the street.
It froze people in the molasses.
Well, I bet it wasn't people, like, hundreds of yards down the street. I bet it was people, like,
right.
Yeah, like, right there.
Yeah, in the immediate vicinity. Yeah.
I heard, like, you said, like, a horse or something?
I think several horses were killed.
Well, there was probably horses everywhere.
Yeah, and horses were sort of part of the rescue mission, too, so.
Yeah.
I had a teacher in third grade. She used, when someone was being slow, she'd say, "You're slow as molasses in January." And we'd always be like, "What the hell is molasses?" And then one day she brought in molasses. We ate molasses off crackers.
Nice.
She's like, "Okay, now you know how slow you guys are."
That was a good learning tool.
And now I look back, I'm like, wow, that was like, why would you tell third graders they were slow as molasses in January?
That's really
no,
not
I don't mean
PC.
Like in the mind. I just mean like you'd
right,
be like
no, no,
doing
no.
your work.
Yeah.
And she'd be like, "You're as slow as molasses in January." Like, do you want me to do it right? Like, what are you teaching me here? All right.
Okay. Slow and steady wins the race.
Apparently, she was more concerned with
speed.
We should talk about your book, too.
Okay.
You wrote a book about Weymouth, which is our hometown.
I did, right. So, it's called Legendary Locals of Weymouth, and it's part of the Legendary Locals series that was put out by Arcadia Publishing.
I've seen these in Barnes & Noble.
Yep. The first one they did, I don't know if it was the first one, but one of the first ones they did was Images of America. And that one was about places and, things that you see in a town and comparing it to today. But this one was about people. So it chronicled people from all Weymouth's history dating, I think the first person is Abigail Adams, up until, I think, the 80s or 90s. Or people that are still living today, actually.
Yeah.
But
Who's the most recent famous person?
From the book? Well, we have Alison Cronin. Who was
Miss America, USA?
Miss Teen USA, I believe. I'm sorry, no, Miss Teen Massachusetts in 2005, and she won first place, which advanced her to the Miss Teen USA competition in New Orleans.
I saw her at I was at the St. Patrick's Day parade in South Boston, and she had a car on it, and she was on it, like, you know.
Oh,
doing,
really?
Doing the typical Miss USA that's cool. wave. Yeah. And I was like, hey, Allison, I'm from Weymouth, too. And she looked at me like, get these drunk people away from me.
Yeah, she...
Of course, I had a few, so.
Right.
She had a right to say that.
She is one of the recent ones that we have, Zoe Burgess, who was famous for, she's not famous, but she was known for holding up a sign at the Susan G. Komen walk about her mom and, you know, keep walking for a cure because her mom passed away from breast cancer and sort of started this whole movement.
So you probably always see that on, like, commercials.
Yeah, I'm not sure about commercials, but people, it was, like, put on T-shirts and things like that. So that was a really big one. And then, of course, Mr. DeCessa's in it.
Oh, I love the Mr. DeCessa. Like, the most famous substitute teacher in Weymouth High history.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's in it.
And then everybody's like, oh, he was in World War II and he has all these medals? Yeah, but he's an awesome substitute teacher.
Yeah.
He's...
And my girlfriend graduated from Fitchburg State.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to every single Fitchburg State graduation.
He does?
Yeah.
Oh, because he went there.
Yeah.
Right. No.
He graduated in like 1940s or something.
Yes.
Or 1950s.
We have it in here. I don't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, he went.
And this, not only, he goes to the summer, I mean the spring and the winter commencements.
Wow. Yeah, he enrolled at Fitchburg State in 1949.
Yeah, so say he graduated in like 53 or something.
Yeah.
He's been going every year since.
Wow.
That's crazy. Because
I went there for... her graduation, which was 2011,
mm-hmm.
winter, and he was there.
Yeah, that's so funny.
He, like, carries a Fitchburg flag out, and then, like, sits on the stage and, like, shakes everyone's hands.
Oh, so he's actually sort of part of it?
Yeah, well, they invite, like, older graduates back. There's, like, a line of them, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if he shakes everyone's hand, but he, like, gives out some stuff and shakes some people's hands.
Love him.
So he clearly is, like, really proud of that. Like, that...
Right.
The guy just loves being around people, you know?
Yeah.
You gotta love that guy.
I love Mr. DeCessa. My mother had him, and my sister had him, and I had him, my brother had him. Like, he's just been around forever.
Yeah. He's still doing it, I think.
Yeah, he is.
Maybe he's just, like, a drawing, you know, he draws people to Fitchburg State.
Yeah, he's a recruiter. He's set up in ways.
Just his presence.
And he's, like, what is he, 85 or something?
Oh, no. He's in his 90s, I think.
He's in his 90s?
He's in his 90s,
yeah.
I think, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. They won't tell him to leave. They'll never tell him to leave.
You can't.
Yeah. Why would you? Why would you tell
him? I just remember, like, we'd have him at substitute. He's like, I just love seeing kids learn.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's like, I want to take advantage of you because you're a substitute, but I just can't.
But you can't,
too
right.
cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too cute of an old person.
Yep.
Can't
yeah,
do it.
I don't know if he, I don't know exactly how old he is, but I think he's at least 90. He fought in World War II, so he's probably at least 90.
So he fought in World War II, and then he got his degree.
Right, he was a mechanic prior to that, and he fought in World War II, and then went to Fitchburg State to become a teacher.
That's a man's man.
Mm-hmm. And apparently all of his friends made fun of him.
Made fun of him getting his degree?
For going to be a teacher, yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah, it's a different time back. That was probably like, that's a girl's job.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
Like.
Right. It's different times.
Old school.
Mm-hmm. Old school, very old school.
Yeah, he... So if he was say he was like 18 when he went into the service, and then he stayed there for like, what's normal, like 3 years, four years?
Yeah.
And then he's 22 and he comes back and he goes to school for like 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he's 26, and this is like 53. And now he's so old now.
Yeah.
And now we're looking at 60 years later after that.
Yeah.
So you're looking at 86.
Mm-hmm.
With that math.
Yeah. And so he's at least in his
at least 86,
yeah.
I would say.
Oh, yeah.
Safe to say he's up there.
Yeah. He's up there.
Doesn't look too... Can't grow a hair on his head anymore. He tries.
I know.
Why don't they call it her story?
Well, I don't know.
Does that offend you?
History is sexist. Some things are just...
Do you think they should, you know, change that?
It doesn't offend me. No, it doesn't.
Should they change it?
We're looking into that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You on any boards that decide this
stuff?
I am.
I'm on the Weymouth Historical Society board.
You guys, within Weymouth, you should change it to his or her story.
Weymouth, his or her.
Whoever
his
told
it. His or her historical society.
His or her. His or whore. No, his or her, it's a tongue twister.
Yeah,
but
his
you,
or
but,
her
know,
historical society.
For PC's sake,
yeah.
You should do it.
Yeah.
His
do it.
/ her story society.
Yeah. We'll bring it up the next board meeting.
There's a movie, PCU. You ever see that? Politically Correct University.
Oh, I've heard of it. I haven't seen it, though.
And one of the girls, there's like a feminist group, and she's like, she always says her story instead of his history.
That's really funny. I love it. That's just funny. Well, speaking of Politically Correct, one of the, my friend showed me this website about, it was a bunch of tweets put together from after the royal baby was born. All these people getting upset because people were assigning the baby a gender because it was a boy. So
wait, they were assigning the
baby a gender role because it was a boy.
Oh, like he can choose
she should be able to choose his or her own gender.
Oh, yeah.
And there were dozens of them.
I'd be like, at the time, it's a boy. Okay?
Right.
Yeah.
Feel free to change it later on.
Relax.
But, yeah.
I think that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but he didn't get to choose when he was born. You're obsessed with the royal family.
I love the royal family. Yeah. I do.
There was no one more excited about the baby than you.
No, I was really excited. Because it's part of history, you know, that we're living. We get to see. I think it's cool. I mean, it's not really, doesn't really affect us, but it's still cool.
I'm going to send you this video on this guy who explains the royal family. Mm-hmm. You might know this stuff, but like he explains why they still keep track of the royal family. Mm-hmm. He's like, the royal family still owns all the property that the government uses.
Right.
But they like signed it over to them for a flat salary. So they get like $26 million a year for the government to use all the land.
Right. And they own, I don't know, I'm probably going to murder this. I don't know exactly how it goes, but there's something that I was told that apparently when you lease in the UK, when you lease property, you're leasing it from the Queen. You're leasing it from the royal family. Something like that. I remember hearing about that. That was years ago, so I don't really know.
I can see something like that.
Yeah, it was.
It's all technicalities.
It's probably the same.
Because it's like they, technically the Queen can say, I'm taking it all back and I'm going to be Queen again. Like at any time.
Yeah. Right.
But obviously that wouldn't go over well.
Right. Like
shit
right.
would go down. So they're never going to do that.
Well, when I was reading this article, they said something about that the Queen, the monarch still has the power to dispel Parliament.
Yeah.
To, you know.
This is all kinds of shit.
Right.
Like, the Queen of England still has the power to say Canada has to be England again.
Right,
like
right.
They separated like that. Like, same with Australia. Mm-hmm. At any moment, they can say, you're back with England.
Right.
But they wouldn't do that because
there
would just be a revolution.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the, like, political ridiculous, of something like that.
But I mean, there's lots of all that sort of like blue law type things.
But in World War II, Canada, as soon as England went to war, mm-hmm. Canada went to war, mm-hmm. and Australia went to war.
Right.
Even though it had nothing to do with them at the time.
Right.
Because this was before even the United States went to war.
It
was,
right.
But that was because they still kind of were England.
Right. They have
they're more separated now. Like as time goes on, they're gonna be more separated. But
yeah.
At the time, they felt like they needed to be there.
Yeah.
They were our allies, eh?
They were our allies,
eh?
Eh? But you know, England's got serious reach.
Yeah.
Across the pond.
So that royal baby's just gonna be born into like complete power, where like at the snap of fingers they can own half the world.
Yeah. Again, technically, I mean, there's always you know.
Technically, but in exchange for not doing that, they get $6 million a year.
Yeah,
which is pretty nice.
I'd take it.
But then the British government makes more money off the land that they like mm-hmm. that they were given. So
right, then they then
so
they pay out.
They don't care. They're giving $26 million.
Right.
But then they should also be ask themselves, why do we even have a royal family?
Right.
No one has a royal family anymore.
Yeah, you say that, but most of the European countries do.
Yeah, but not...
But they're not anything.
Not like that.
No. I mean, no.
I mean, like, they probably keep track of their bloodline and everything.
Right. But I mean, no, like, they actually have ruling kings, like Denmark, Sweden.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
They all do. Not just Europe. I think, like, Asia has, like...
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that too, yeah.
Like, royalty and mm-hmm. stuff like that, and Africa does too, and... Mm-hmm.
In the Middle East, there's a couple countries with sultans, like...
Yeah.
Sheikhs. They like actually rule.
No, weird. Get out of here.
Yeah
like UAE, United Arab Emirates.
Oh.
It's like a bunch of states. And they all have their own kings.
Those are the ones that are like like building their own islands, right? Yeah. Into, like,
yeah, they're wicked rich.
Yeah, they have a lot of
money. Well, there's Abu Dhabi and there's Dubai, yeah, which are like the two richest ones. Abu Dhabi ran out of oil, so they kind of like, well, as they were running out of oil, they built tons of tourist attractions, mm-hmm, so they could like shift their economy to that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Same thing that Dubai's doing. Dubai has that tallest building.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen that.
Do you mind?
And they made those islands that look like the map of the world in the sea, and you can own one little piece. And you can own one little piece. It's like, you can own like this part of Canada.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's an island, and you can just build a house there. And
that's like, crazy.
Yeah.
Well, going back to the English royal family, one of the interesting things about this baby is that this was the first time that that primogeniture, which is the automatic male, the male automatically becoming the first male. It has to be the first male. Like before, it was, you had to have the crown had to go to a boy if it was the first
boy. They just changed that. Yeah.
Right, they just changed it a few years ago so that even if it was a girl, or even if they had a younger son, the girl would still rule if she was first. So that's kind of cool.
That video I was telling you about, he explained all that shit.
Yeah.
And how if you don't have a son, it would go up, and then it would go to the next oldest uncle.
Right,
and then it would go down his bloodline. Mm-hmm. And then if he had nothing, it would go back up, it would go to the next oldest uncle. And if there were no more uncles, it would go up to the next line and go to the next oldest uncle there.
But that actually stopped though for a while because I know that in when Henry VIII died, his son Edward ruled, and then later it was his daughters. So after the son died with no kids, it didn't go to another male relative. They may not have been a male relative, I'm not sure, but it did eventually go to his daughters, to two daughters. So
because there was no other choice,
right? And that was in the mid 16th century, so it's been going on for quite a while.
Henry VIII.
Yeah.
As opposed to Henry VII?
Right, who was his father, right.
Oh.
Ruled from 1509 to 1550.
Right? When was the Magna Carta?
1066.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Philly Madison?
Yeah. I just pictured you as Chris Farley there for a minute.
Kind of. But the teacher's going, Magna Carta? And he's like, 12. He's like, nope. And he's putting like a shirt back on. And then later, Chris Farley's like, Magna Carta. And he's like, 1055. He's like, that is correct. And he just like throws off his shirt. Like,
takes off his shirt. And stuff.
And it's Chris Farley's body, so it's just.
That's so funny.
And of course, anything Chris Farley does is just hilarious.
Almost Heroes.
Last movie he ever did.
That was his last
one? Yeah, Almost Heroes. With Chandler from Friends.
Yeah.
Where they go to the Lewis Clark, the racing Lewis.
Yeah.
Clark.
Oh, that was funny.
That movie's so funny.
Yeah, the eagle. He died.
Remember the eagle?
In it. Oh,
I die every time I see
that. Oh, no. Yeah, just the way he yells and everything. Me and this guy at work, we always say, because he had this thing on SNL where he was on Weekend Update. And he came on Weekend Update, and he's like, so I says to the guy, okay? So he's standing right there, and I says to the guy. So he says to the guy. He goes, he's like smoking a cigarette. He's like, so he's standing right there, okay? Okay, listen to this. And I says to the guy, and he goes on for about 5 minutes just doing this. That's too funny. And he's like, what did you say? And he's like, holy shit, I forget. Oh, that guy. What a guy. Talk about history. That guy is a historic figure.
Chris Farley?
Yeah.
That's correct.
For comedy.
Yeah.
Not so much. You're not going to see him in the Winslow House.
No.
Not going to see him in Old
Different North era. Yeah. No.
Any events coming up for your
Winslow House?
Your house?
We've got the two this week.
You explained those, right? Yeah.
18th century.
I wasn't listening.
That's okay. and then August 8th, I think that's the next one. Thursday, August 8th, we're having Anita Hodge Flanagan talking about her book Acadia Hogs.
Anita Hogg?
Hodge Flanagan.
Oh, okay.
About Acadia. She wrote a book called Acadia Lost, which is a novel about the Acadian expulsion.
What's that?
In the 17 40s or 50s, I think it was. I should know that. That's embarrassing. After the British finally kicked out, the British won over Nova Scotia. They won.
Okay.
What was then Acadia, and it's now Nova Scotia. And they acquired that, I think, in 1713, and the French people were still living in that fort, in Grand Prix, I think it was, and they would not swear allegiance to the British king, so the British king at that point finally said, okay, you have to either sign this, you know, oath of allegiance or get the hell out. And so they expelled, I think, I don't know how many, several thousand people. And it was, they say, one of the biggest population movements or
Exodus.
Something.
That's so weird.
Yeah, in the history of the Western world. And it was, yeah, that was in 1790.
That's so weird. I feel like I just saw an article on that, I feel.
Yeah. And so it ties to the Winslow house because John Winslow was a general. He was the third generation Winslow that lived in the house. And he was a general for the British army. And he was in charge, well, second in command of the fort in Acadia. He was part of sort of in charge of that expulsion. So.
Oh, he was working for the British?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they were British at the time of the Winslow house. Right. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a different time, man. It's a different time.
Yeah.
And the Old North Church, you can go there anytime.
Anytime. Well, it's open 9 to 6 during the summer. And starting, 9 to 6. It'll be open 9 to 6 until the end of October. And it's open daily all year.
Can I just go in and walk around?
You can go and walk around.
Do I have to wait for a tour?
Nope. It's free. We appreciate donations, of course, because we're a nonprofit, but it is free to go in.
For sure. You should definitely donate if you
go. Oh, yeah. Because it keeps, you know, we
$5,
goes
whatever.
Toward preservation, maintenance, preservation of the church. And
say you get no donations all year. Where do you get the money? You have to do fundraisers.
Well, we
stuff?
Do the behind the scenes tours we charge money for.
Okay.
So those you have to pay $5 if you're an adult. But one of the most important things when it comes to nonprofits is grant writing and fundraising. So that's one of the big things that we do there and at the Winslow House as well to try to raise money.
Mm. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Got to get that cheddar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you get. I feel like at one, you know, you never know. Sometimes people could just stop donating.
Right. It happens. You know, it does happen. So that's.
Is that how the Winslow House works too?
Winslow House, yeah, we have a membership program at the Winslow House, so you can actually become a member. So that's been one of the largest financial, you know, support system for the organization's been around for almost 100 years. So that's been.
So you pay like a monthly or a yearly?
Yearly, yeah. So that's one of our big things, but the Old North doesn't have that. The Old North Church is still an actual church, so they have their own members, church members. But
really?
Right, yeah. The Old North has two services every Sunday morning, so it's still a fully functioning Episcopal church.
Oh. I didn't even know that.
Yep.
Wow. I am thinking, I'm going to have Erica over. She's going to tell me the same shit she's already told me. What do you know? I learned something.
That's right.
But that wasn't... You taught me a lot of things today, actually.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm just full of knowledge.
Well, you know, you're a history scholar.
I wouldn't say scholar.
Would you... You have a master's degree, right?
Almost. I have to finish my thesis before I actually get it.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was going to ask. Like, thesis?
Yeah.
I feel like the history thesis would be, like, the hardest thing to
do. Yeah, it's tough. Actually getting started is the hardest part because it's a matter of just getting myself to the library and doing it. And it's not easy, but it's going to happen.
You should walk in... Do you have, like a review board of your thesis or something?
We have a thesis committee of 3 professors. You have your advisor and then 2... readers, they call them. And so what you do is you have to submit it to them a few weeks prior and they read it and then they come up with a list of questions and you have to defend it orally to them.
You should just slap down your book and be like, that's my answer, bitch.
Be like, this has nothing with your thesis.
How many books you got?
Yeah.
And they'll be like, 17.
They'll be like, what, in the past year?
They're like, with pictures in it? None.
I know. Amateur. Oh, well.
They're like, whoa, 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 as they're drinking tea with their pinky.
Pinky out.
And they're all going to have beards, so they're going to be intimidating.
Right. Well, 2 of them are women, so.
Yeah. They're all more intimidating than a beard.
Right, yeah.
So good luck with that.
Thank you.
Well, I guess we're about out of time.
Oh, gosh.
So, yeah, it's already been like 40 minutes.
Okay.
So I guess I'll just say thank you for listening to this. And is there anything else you want to add in about your sites?
Well, no, just that Old North's open 9 to 5 daily, and Winslow House is open Thursday and Friday, 12 to 4, and Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 1 for tours. So stop
in Marshfield.
In Marshfield, yep. 634 Cares.
It's a hike from here, but.
From here, yeah.
It's people near there. I actually know a guy who lives in Marshfield, and I told him to go.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, yeah, I've been there.
Yeah.
Like, don't ever talk to me again. He works with me. He's a miserable son of a bitch.
Okay.
But he went there, so there you go. That's one more. All right, so Aaron, you got anything to add? You dropping? When's your album dropping?
Yo, this album be dropping.
Relapse.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.